Hey guys, welcome back to Unpopular. I have friend of the pod, Jess from Hot Takes and Deep Dives back on. This was a really fun episode to record. I had a great time with Jess. It's really funny. We do a lot of like pop music topics and reality TV. There's like a bit of everything. It's really good. It's a little choppy in parts because I had to make some edits. You probably won't even notice. And you know that my hypercritical Virgo brain is always like overthinking everything. And if I think there's like anything wrong with the episode or something's wrong with the sound, I'm like overreacting and like warning people 10 times. And then you like listen and it's completely fine. But I did take out a couple of things. So I took out, there was a certain topic that we talked about at the start that got the cut for reasons that I'll explain on Patreon. And then I also, this is a little confusing, but I plugged my Patreon a fair bit throughout the episode with Jess because there was something on there. And then after we recorded, then I had to delete that Patreon episode. And then I actually re-uploaded it again with like a new intro to explain some stuff about it. Then I deleted it a second time. Now there is a third Patreon episode up explaining some things. It's actually really dumb. But that's what happens when you are a, you know, pop culture podcaster. You get dragged into the trash with the Gremlins and Oscar the Grouch, and it's actually really embarrassing. But that is all on Patreon. I know it's confusing. It's all explained there. And I actually talk a little bit about the future of the podcast, some of my plans for the future. Am I getting rid of the podcast? Possibly. It's a whole thing. Besides that, everything's actually been going really, really well. Like, no complaints. You know that I like to be right about everything, right? So I've had a lot of messages in the last like 2 weeks specifically of people saying, oh, you were right on Israel-Palestine. And then the people that haven't said that have they're moving more in the middle. So people are either telling me that I was right or they're like shifting. And it really all happened mostly in the span of 1 week. It's like when it rains, it pours. I don't know what the catalyst was for people to come over to my side on this, but it's certainly nice to hear, not just for my own ego, but also for, you know, maybe thousands of, you know, children won't be murdered. So that's also good. And yeah, and I remembered, I flashed back to when I first talked about it on the podcast. I talked about it a couple of times, but there was one episode where I really went into it and I was very nervous about recording it for so many different reasons. I was worried about fucking up my visa thing by speaking out, honestly, which was probably overly paranoid, but you never know because a lot of people in my industry, the media industry, were losing their jobs. It took me right back to COVID because I would like talk to other journalists and they would either, their eyes would glaze over and they just would like not engage, or because they didn't want to say the wrong thing and get in trouble, or they didn't know what was going on. It was just weird. Or they knew what was going on, or they were scared to talk about it. So that increased my sense of paranoia, and I had a lot riding on the line with, you know, job transfer and coming to a new country, a new city, and I was very, very stressed out. I was getting like COVID PTSD of being censored, which is a trigger for me. And I tried to bite my tongue and then I couldn't. So I did a whole episode blurting it out. And then I think I actually went back into the episode and edited a couple of pieces out to like soften it. Because I really went in there. I'm like, they're killing babies. Girl, I was like trying to wake people up. And you know, it was an interesting response because I did get people messaging me like, oh my God, thank you for like using your platform, because like so many people were not, especially in my industry. And I understand, I get it, because you can lose your job. And it's, you know, it's one thing to say, speak up on an issue that, you know, that you should be speaking up on. But it's another thing to say, well, you might be unemployed and then how's that going to fuck up your life? So I don't begrudge people in positions where they can lose it. You know, I get it. But I did get a lot of people thanking me for speaking up. And then I also lost Patreon subscribers, lost followers, you know, got stupid, really ignorant messages of, well, why don't you go over to Gaza where they throw gays off buildings and all of that bullshit. And I remember saying to myself at the time, because I was going crazy and I just, you know, I couldn't, and I'm in the media and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, then now we're back to the media lying again about everything. Okay, great. And that's making me just go crazy. And I remember saying to myself, like, you know, I just need to calm down. I know there's nothing I can really do to change anything. People are like, I've never seen so much evidence for the case against Israel with what they're doing in this specific conflict and stuff. And I'm like, if I can fucking, a dumbass like me can find this so easily, you know, it's only a matter of time before people start coming around. I don't know if it would be 6 months. I don't know if it would be 6 years, but it's going to happen. And it seems like the shift is happening because it's very much all of a sudden I'm getting all these people like circling back to me. Now, again, I don't know why it takes people 6 months because so many people in my personal life, I'm like sending them the hardcore evidence of like whatever I think will work for them, whether it's like a debate, whether it's, you know, war crimes footage, like anything. And because they'll say, oh yeah, no, I'm open to it, send it to me. And then you send it to them again, the eyes glaze over, they just doesn't compute in their brain. It's interesting. It's just a human thing. Like, you can show people the truth, but if they're not ready to receive it, they're just not going to receive it. They're not going to hear it. And it's happened to me. I've been that person where it's like someone's literally telling you the sky is blue and you're going, no, it's not. So I don't know. You just have to like know that people are like that. And then instead of like flipping out, which is hard to not do, you just got to go, okay, they're going to come around. You know, the truth's on your side and it happens. So that's nice. It's kind of given me a little bit more faith in humanity. A little bit, not a lot, because I'm always like, well, why did it take you 6 months? You know, they were killing babies before and they're still doing it now. I don't know why it took an extra fucking 10,000 for you to wake up. But welcome to the party. So we love that. And we love that for my ego too, because of course, on a petty level, I do like people going, oh, you were right about that. You know, I have a Napoleon complex. I mean, I'm very tall, so I don't really have a Napoleon complex, but you know what I mean. All right, guys, this is a fun episode. If you want the tea on the embarrassing, cringy drama going on in the future of the pod, that is on patreon.com/unpopularjp. And yeah, enjoy this episode with Jess. It might be the last, but it might not. You know, sometimes I get in a mood, I'm ready to flush it all down the toilet, and then give me a couple of days and I'm fine. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening. Bye. All right. Hey, guys. One of your faves is back on the pod this week. It is GLAAD nominee Jess Rothschild. How are you?
Oh, my God. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're an award nominee. That's how I'm going to announce you, or an award winner. Has it happened yet?
No, it's next month in New York.
Okay. Manifesting you winning. And
maybe say what it's for.
Okay, yes. You are nominated for Fire Island, Finding Fire Island, your amazing podcast all about gay history of Fire Island, and has a lot of celebrity cameos in there. Margaret Cho, and critically acclaimed, did well on the charts, and now you're in the Rainbow New York Mafia elite.
And now perhaps more than anything, it also stars Chef Stu's new two-dater.
two dates.
We'll talk about that after, hopefully.
I have some breaking news to give you, actually, and I wanted to wait until I had you in person to tell you.
Uh-oh.
I think I'm ready to come back to New York. I've calmed down.
You're bullshitting.
No,
I know this is for real.
I mean, I don't mean this second, but I'm like, you know what? I can come back at a later date, later this year, as long as I have time off and I don't have to work at all and I have some money to spend. And
mean just for like a long weekend or
yes, not to live, but I just mean I feel good enough to enter New York again, because when I left I was like, never again. Like, I was like, I'll never return. And now I feel like I could come back and not be traumatized.
Well, we spent a bit of time together when you were here in New York, and you also have to like put it in context. You were fresh off a plane from Australia. You were thrown into a New York winter. You didn't know where you were. You were also like Monday starting this job. Like, those are very intense circumstances to take in a new city especially one like New York, where it's like, where the fuck am I? Like, where do I go? You know?
No, that is true. But I will say all of my New York rants, they did receive a standing O. Like, a lot of people were like, you nailed it. That is New York to a fucking T. New York sucks. Like, except...
But you also didn't do anything while you were here. You didn't see an interesting show. Not even just, like, a cult thing. Like, I would take you to, like, something...
No, I don't want to go to an underground cult thing. There's plenty of stuff to do here in LA. It's beautiful. Anyway, I had you on because I have a lot of music topics this week, and you're a little bit of a pop girl, as everyone that is LGBT is. Are you aware that I am now the EP/A&R for Heidi Montag's music comeback?
Yeah, how could I have missed it?
And are you impressed with my entry into the music industry?
I'm extremely impressed.
Do you know anything about her history, like anything about her music career, her gay fandom, any of that?
Here's what I know, and it's a short list. So I know that she had I know that she had one album come out in 2010 called Superficial, and I really like the title track, and I really like I'll Do It. I was amazed by the number of streams on those two songs. Like, she's 24 million streams on I'll Do It, which really shocked the hell out of me about 10 minutes ago when I found out that statistic. That's really all I know. I know that there's the DJ. Wait, or whoever.
She has more. She has 45 million on I'll Do It on Spotify. And then when you add up the other versions, like the sped up version, the slowed down version, it's more like 70 something million.
That's unbelievable. Has she been able to properly monetize that? Like, does she own the publishing?
Yes, but she didn't write the song, but they still are making some money off of it because they own all the album, which is really good. But what happened? I don't know how much I can share because I think there's stuff going on behind the scenes. But basically, that song, I'll Do It, went, you know, crazy viral in the last few years. Because basically, let me give people the history of Heidi's album first. So when she was on The Hills, her dream was to, like, okay, I'm going to be on The Hills, I'm this reality star, and then I'm going to transition and be like the next Britney Spears. And they started kind of just like throwing songs out there, not promoted properly. There was this famous video that she did for this song called Higher that was really low budget, where she's running around the beach, and it was like one of the first joke meme videos that got savaged on Perez Hilton. And then when she got to doing the album, they actually spent like $2 million hiring, like, I'll Do It and Superficial, all those songs. That's like Britney, Rihanna songwriters. Like, they hired, put all their Hills money into like the best hit makers. The album only sold 1,000 copies in the first week back then, and they lost, like, it didn't even chart on the Billboard 200. They lost all their money on it. And now, like, 15 years later, it has gone viral, which is so interesting with the way that, you know, like, just like TikTok and the music industry's changed so much now. And that song, I'll Do It, they took a chunk of that, and that went viral in China on the Chinese version of TikTok called Douyin, and it got like 2 billion streams on there. But
can you monetize that?
Well, they stole it and they didn't credit Heidi Montag. They credited, like, because it was like some DJ took the song and then they put their name. Like, there was some loophole that they used. So they've been trying to fight that, because if she had been credited for all the streams, like, that song, I'll Do It, probably would have got on like Billboard or something. Because you know how now they've got like the TikTok charts? That's like the main chart now. Like, that's not like the Hot 100 doesn't matter as much. Like, it's a little bit more about like the TikTok charts,
which is so ridiculous. So here's what I want to, so this actually answers my question. Like, I wanted to know, where has she been between 2010 and 2024 with music? Well, it explains, if she only sold 1,000 copies, I understand why she would have been let out of whatever deal she had.
They kind of had, like, they kind of did it independently, but they did have some deal with Warner, but it wasn't like she was directly signed. It was some other deal, but they own everything. But it was just, you know, it's expensive to be an artist. But, you know, again, the industry's changed. Like, 15 years ago, when she was trying to be the next Britney or whatever, that was when, like, you needed a label behind you to send your record to radio, get radio play. How much did you sell first week? This is what you are on the Hot 100. Now with, like, TikTok and streaming, it's, like, a completely different game. Like, if you look at, I don't know if you follow, like, Slater or any of those new pop girls.
I know that Slater is the person who they did a collab.
Yeah, they did a
lit the gay internet on fire.
Yeah, yeah. They did like a cover of Gimme More. Mm-hmm. And she's done some other stuff. But now those artists like Slater, etc., they don't chart on the Hot 100 at all. Like even Kim Petras has barely charted except for the song with Sam Smith, but they still have like millions and millions of streams and they can still go on tour and everything. So it's just a whole different world with streaming. So now we're bringing Heidi's music back. She's in the studio. We're like going for streaming, just hot cunty dance records for the gays, bringing the 2010s pop back. It's a whole vibe.
And so this is all motivated by the TikTok. This is your way of monetizing or taking control over the TikTokification of her career.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like you've got to go where there's some interest. You know, like Bethany's very good at pivoting to that. Oh, divorce is the hot topic now. Let me go into that. So, you know, Spidey, they're always trying to do stuff. And they saw, hang on, like there's interest in her music career now. Like,
I do love that. The song Superficial is good.
It's so good. That's actually like probably my favorite one. So the new songs are good. We're kind of like doing a mixture of stuff. So we've got stuff that's like throwing it back to like 2010s.
See if she can do a cover.
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, I don't know if I can. I'll tell you off. It's really funny that there's a cover.
You know what she should do? Here, free idea.
Well, she might have already done it.
She should do a cover of Circus, the Britney song Circus.
No, she's done the Gimme More cover with Slater, which actually they couldn't release it officially because of like publishing.
But Circus is a better song. Circus, the lyrics, it to me, it makes more sense.
No, I'll tell you what she did offline. You'll actually roll your eyes at it, but it's actually kind of genius, but I can't reveal it. But like we have some stuff cooking. The gays will love it. Okay. 2010s pop, JoJo Siwa, Karma. I kind of forced you to listen to this. I was surprised that you weren't tapped into the sort of JoJo of it all because she's just been trending nonstop. But I guess you're more into the Justin Timberlake kind of mum pop. You're not checking out the new shit.
No. I'm here to defend my honor in this one. No. Okay. So JoJo Siwa, obviously I've heard the name over the past couple of years, but I never knew what the music was. I didn't know her whole history. And of course, over the past week, it's all anybody's talking about. And I knew we were going to talk about this. So I like did a deep dive on her. I've watched the video. I know the story. I've heard the song. I have thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, so she's from Dance Moms. She's like a teen idol. And I've always loved her because, look, I'm such a contrarian and I always feel for people that get an unnecessary amount of hate. And for years, this girl has been just relentlessly hated on. Like, it's really crazy because she's, like, nice. Like, she has a really positive image. I mean, she's dancing around with a fucking, you know, a side pony and glitter and everything. And she gets trolled so fucking hard. And I always found her to be a very kind of fearless individual. And I always admired that she still had this, like, childish image, even though she was, like, 17, 18. Yeah. It's like, girl, it's making her millions. Like, she doesn't give a fuck if you think she's cringe. Like, she's taken it all the way to the bank. And she's a children's entertainer. So I've always been a fan of hers. And then, you know, with this new single, Karma, this is her, I guess, entry into adult pop. This is her Miley Cyrus Can't Be Tamed era. They're comparing it to bangers, but it's more of her Can't Be Tamed. And she came out dressed basically like Gene Simmons in Kiss at the iHeart Awards that went mega viral. And I just thought she was a fucking marketing genius for it because it was like, if she came out and she tried to do a Miley Cyrus bangers thing and tried to emulate, you know, Dua Lipa or whoever the, you know, fucking Billie Eilish or something, like, girl, you're not going to be able to pull that off. Like, that's not you. That is going to look way more cringe. But she leaned into sort of what people hate about her. And she went so far into it and so extreme that it ended up kind of having the same impact that it would if she had done the typical, like, you know, I'm a slave for you. I'm Christina Aguilera stripped. Now I'm a slut, you know, like going that direction. And she got everyone hating on her so hard. And then I feel like she almost turned herself into a meme and then memed this song to be a hit, because before the song even dropped officially, it was already charting from like a snippet from streams that she had put on TikTok. And then she dropped the video. It went straight to number one on YouTube. And the song is a banger. It's like a throwback. It's so fun. It's just a throwback to like Red One, Miley Cyrus, Rock Mafia. I believe it was actually produced back in 2010 or whatever. The demo leaked.
So the song is, I like the song, but it definitely sounds 2010. It sounds like that era. And it was written, I think, in 2011 by a woman named Britt Smith. And it's a scrapped Miley Cyrus song. Like, it was literally like written for Miley, and Miley didn't choose it. So that's why it sounds like from that era, because it literally is.
Yeah, but it's like it's supposed to. She's kind of like bringing it back. I mean,
It sounds dated, but it's fine.
I think it sounds dated in a good way. I think it's nostalgia. Look, we're older now, so it probably feels like it wasn't that long ago. But then if you're like a Gen Z, or, you know, you're a teenager now, that's like ancient. Like that's right. Like us when we were looking back at the 80s or whatever.
What did you think of the video?
I loved it just because it's so extra, it's so tacky, it's so ridiculous. I love the Sugar Rush, you know, dancing like a 2-year-old that's had too much candy and they're just thrusting and flailing everywhere. I'm just into the whole thing. I love the budget of it. It's so extra, it's so different. Like, what I love with JoJo, is like you can't like compare her really to anybody else. Like, cause you look at so many pop stars that come out and they're all kind of similar versions of each other. I mean, of course you do have some that are really just stand out, like a Lana Del Rey or even like a Billie Eilish, where it's like, okay, this person has like such a specific image, but a lot of them are just clones of each other. And JoJo is just so her own thing. So like, I mean, I fucking love everything about it.
I thought it was hilarious how the first, the first act of it takes place on a lesbian cruise, which is very funny. It's like, here's my question. Are like Brandy and Julie doing like stand up? Like, is that like, if this was an actual lesbian cruise, Brandy and Julie would literally be acts on the cruise, like, and then doing a wrap up show of the events on the cruise. And they'd be recapping JoJo Siwa's performance on the last night, roasting everybody.
The lesbianness of it all, the lesbianism of it all, I think is kind of radical because, of course, you know, JoJo is like a lesbian, and I don't know if you've seen her interviewed, but she has. Have you seen her interviewed? Like, I mean, yeah, she's full on.
I watched the Call Her Daddy interview.
And she has kind of like mask energy, kind of, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just feel like I like that she's a lesbian in today's age.
Well, she also sounds like she's like smoking like 12 cigs a day.
Yeah, but she's not.
Which, by the way, I like.
I think she's good looking. Like, I think she's got a vibe. But, you know, in today's culture of the non-binaries and, you know, all of the gender bending that Gen Z is doing, it's like she's not only is her music a throwback, but her just being a lesbian is like a throwback to like, hey, you can actually just be like a lesbian, like a normal lesbian. And I kind of like
without
that.
Without having to transition or
be. Yeah, with just all of it. Yeah, without all of the, you know, the weird gender stuff or going full trans or whatever. And I feel like that's
kind of.
It's okay
to be a woman. It's okay to be a
woman. Yes.
It's okay. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, you know, because anybody else that was doing that, I think they would just come out with a lot of like annoying labels around it. And I feel like even just her being a lesbian is like being more yourself. Because I mean, a lot of these people that are coming out, like they're doing it in more of a trendy way where it's like, okay, this is the sort of gender identities we're seeing on social media and we're going to adopt that. And how many like straight people are doing that now? And then, you know, a few years later, they're going to lose it. So I'm just all for everything about it. Although she did get a lot of flack because she said she was bringing gay pop back, or she invented gay pop. And I don't think she knows her music history that well.
Isn't she also like 20 years old?
Yeah, I think
this this is a person with no life experience. And how would she know music history? Like, does she even know the song Vogue, or know what Madonna is, or know what Elton John is, or Michael Jackson, or Janet Jackson, or Adam Lambert?
Well, she
or
said
Lil Nas X from 2 years ago.
When she got backlash for saying the gay pop thing, she did, it was obviously set up for her to respond to it by TMZ. She's walking into the Jan studio and she's like, no, I'm not saying that I invented it. Like, of course people came before me, like Madonna did gay pop, Michael Jackson. It's like, Michael Jackson didn't do gay pop, girl. He was straight.
I know, as soon as I said Michael Jackson, I wanted to reel the words back into my, as soon as I threw that out there, I wanted to the words to go
I know.
Back in.
No, but it's like, look, she doesn't really know her music history. As she knows as far back as Miley Cyrus Can't Be Tamed, which is why she's doing a Miley Cyrus Can't Be Tamed thing. But she means well, guys. So,
by the way, is it true that her mom still makes her costumes?
I didn't know that. But
fact check that, but I read that to be true.
Very Tina Knowles. Tina Knowles was stitching them up for House of Darion for years.
And also, when I see the look, well, not the Gene Simmons look, I'm talking about in the video, it looks like, I'm not so sure that Gene Simmons was the inspiration. I think the inspiration was really Adam Lambert and Lil Nas X, especially with Lil Nas X with the, you know how like that football video he did? Like,
oh,
when they're
yeah.
Wearing, that's exactly what she's wearing. And then using the Adam Lambert glam eye makeup, if you combine those two things together, that's what
I don't know
like.
If she would. I felt like it was actually, I did feel like it was Kiss inspired. Not that she would know who Gene Simmons is or anything, but I also felt it was very Dance Moms inspired, because it looked like those tacky recitals that they do on Dance Moms when, you know, so, which I love. She's, you know, she's, that's who she is. She's owning it. So I've been listening to JoJo. You have been listening to Justin Timberlake's album.
No. Here's the thing. Okay. Very quickly, Justin Timberlake. And I know that you're a Justin Timberlake fan. I listened to the album when it came out. Well, when the lead single, Selfish, came out, I couldn't believe that this was the song that was chosen to be representative and to like hook people into.
Wait, can we talk about that first, Selfish, before we go on to the rest of it? Because I know that you messaged me about Selfish when it came out and you were saying, how is this the lead single? I disagreed with you, and not from the point of thinking that Selfish was an amazing song. I was thinking it more as a marketing thing, and I'm like, look, he's in his 40s now. He's not going to be able to pull off the hot stuff that is coming with the newer artists. I thought that was a good way to kind of come back in the game with something very radio friendly. You know, his audience now are like soccer moms, and it is a soccer mom song, and it's a radio friendly song, and it's very safe, and it's kind of nostalgic because it does sound like a song that would have come out in the 2010s. Like, I think people are actually really trying to bring this vibe back. Well, the 2000s even. So I actually thought it was kind of the perfect lead single without me thinking that it's a great song. But I just think for the soccer mom audience that you're courting, I thought it was good.
I don't know. I mean, to me, like, there's just no hook to the song. There's no hook. There's no melody.
It kind of gets stuck in my head sometimes. Yeah, I don't mind it. Look, I'm invested in him as a person, I got to say as well, because people know that I'm a big Justin Timberlake fan and a defender. And I do think the early albums are amazing. Like, I absolutely love Justified. You know, I love Future Sex. Actually, I love 2020 as well. Like, I think all those albums are great. Yeah. I've seen Justin multiple times in concert. I think he was one of the best pop stars I've seen in concert before, legit. Like, does not get the credit that he deserves as a performer with his tours. Like, they're really, really good. But I'm also just invested in him as a person. So even if the song is a bit like, it's a mid song, I just like Justin Timberlake. And I also feel very protective of him because he's been so savage now in the press for so long and so unfairly. Of course, I broke down all the Britney stuff. I believe a lot of those allegations were lies and half. I mean, you can fact check them.
Think that he pulled out a guitar at her abortion or whatever?
Look,
it was?
Maybe, but I don't think that that was the whole story of how the situation. Like, I think that happened, but I think it's been taken out. There was more to it. I broke a lot of it down at the time, and she lied so much in that book. It was kind of crazy that
didn't your friend ghostwrite it?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was my friend back in the day. I haven't spoke to him in years, but...
Get him on the pod.
Yeah, I know. He wouldn't, though. He's very much in the... He's very much ascended into the world of, like, I'm going to dinner with Ronan Farrow tonight. You know, he's not coming on Unpopular, but...
come on Hot Takes?
Maybe. He might, actually. No, he's great. Like, he's awesome. But, I want to rewind as well with Justin Timberlake, because when he released Man of the Woods, the hate that he got for that, and that was honestly... Truly, and I think people forget how bad this was, but you can go back and look at the articles that came out, the album reviews and stuff. He sort of became the face of like straight white men. And that was a lot of that peak of like the sort of, you know, the woke culture and all of that, and really tearing down straight white cis men. And he just became the whole face of that movement. And if you go back and look at, like, I'm not saying that Man of the Woods is the greatest album ever, but the reviews are literally like vicious. And people were so triggered that he did like a country aesthetic. So he's really been unfairly attacked and maligned for a really long time. I didn't think Man of the Woods was even that bad. I actually like some of the songs on it. I just think that it was very confused, because it was kind of like, okay, I'm doing this like country aesthetic, but then the lead single I'm doing is Filthy, which is, I love that song, but it's like, it's a futuristic lead single where I'm doing this Steve Jobs thing, but then the album is kind of like country coded. So and then obviously coming out at that time, I think that where he should have gone in his music career, I do think leaning into the country music thing was actually where he should have gone, but he just should have done a better job at it. Because now I think on this new album, he's going back to a lot of this sort of like urban and the disco kind of stuff and the pop. And it's like, dude, you're in your like 40s now. Like, no one cares.
Have you listened to the new album?
I listened to it this morning because I knew I was recording with you. So when I was in the shower and stuff, walking around, so I've given it one play.
One play. Tell me if you agree with this. So the reason why I said I keep listening to the Justin Timberlake album is I simply just can't believe that there are no good songs on it. The album is like 18 tracks. There are 4 songs that I like. How is that even mathematically possible?
Okay, I don't think...
When it's Justin Timberlake.
I don't think it's as bad as you're making it out to be, for sure. I mean, am I even going to listen to it again? No, but like even the last podcast I did, I reviewed Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter. Even though I was like ripping her, I actually gave it like a good review overall. Like I actually said it's like pretty good. I haven't listened to it once since I did that podcast. So it's not that personal, it's just I don't care. But so I'm not going to listen to Justin Timberlake again, really. But... I thought it was fine. I thought obviously it was way too many fucking songs. Like that was crazy to put 16, 18 songs, however many. Like you really need to be doing like a tight 10 or 11. Because there was a lot of filler. There was a lot of stuff that could get cut. But it's just we don't have the attention span for a long album now. Like literally unless you are like Lana Del Rey or something and you can do this sprawling album – if you're a pop star, do not be giving me a fucking 16-track album. That's ridiculous. Like, if you need to have that many...
It's 18 tracks of songs that he's written and recorded in the past, but worse. It's like he took his best songs and tried to recreate the feeling, but none of them hit the mark.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the worst parts is just... He's a corny guy. He's a very corny guy.
And is he really that in love with Jessica Biel?
I don't know, but the lyrics...
The lyrics are insane.
They're so bad. The lyrics are horrible. I think that's where the album goes wrong more than anything. And his corniness, like, I think he could get away with the corniness when he was younger because he did have a little more swag and stuff. But now, like, you're a dad and you can feel the mum and dad pop coming through it and it's just really cheesy. You know, I didn't mind it for the lead single, but a whole album of that. But I still think there's some good tracks. Some of the ballads are good. I would cut it. I think it would be a solid Justin Timberlake album if you cut it down to 10 songs and just like the 10 best tracks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
what did you think of the NSYNC song?
I only listened to that once. It sounded fine. It was good. Like there weren't... I wasn't listening to the songs that much, being like, oh, this is awful. It was just a bit like ho-hum for a lot of it. But like some songs popped. Like, what did I like? I liked, there was some, wait, I've got Heidi Montag open on here. Where's JT? I liked, I think it was Infinity Sex. I like that. I liked Alone.
I love Alone. I love Alone.
That's
it's like,
really...
okay, we have a shred of humanity. It's like, there's an actual person with real human feelings, and that's Alone. Like, that song has, okay, they're like a human being has some lived experience, and they put it in a song. That's the only one with, like, real...
No, I disagree with that. I think, like, even Memphis, the opening song, that, I mean, it's
I
not
like
a good
that
song,
too, yeah.
but it's all about him and, you yes. know, being famous and stuff. Like, no, I think he put himself into it. I think that's why it's corny, because he's kind of a corny dude. But I think if you want to do this kind of genre of music, like, you've really got to be doing it at a Bruno Mars level. And I think Bruno Mars sort of came and... took, you know, it's like JT passed the torch to Bruno in a sense. So I do feel like Justin should be doing more country music coded stuff. I think that would be better for the audience. Like, I think that would have worked. And I think he kind of like missed the boat to really do that pivot, because he didn't commit fully during Man of the Woods. And then on top of it, the hate campaign. And I do think that the negative press around Britney has affected the album. Like, I do think the album
for sure.
And he would be doing better if he didn't have this.
It got terrible review. Like, every review across the board rips it to shreds.
But I think they're being overly harsh. I think they're writing it from a place of being a Britney stan. Like, it's not as bad as they say. Neither was Man of the Woods. Like, they're not as bad as critics are trying to make out, in my opinion. I think so much of
Man
it
of
is
the Woods
personal.
Is better than this.
Yeah, I do think Man of the Woods is better than this. I don't know. Poor JT. I'm waiting for him to come out and do his tell-all interview, because I know that he has it in him, and I know that he probably really wants to set the record straight on some of this Britney stuff, and I'm sure he's had talks with his teams about, is now the right time to do it? But it's just, you've got to be really careful, because people, you can tell the truth, but people need to be ready to hear it. And I think people are getting closer to seeing the truth with Britney. You know, the longer that she acts like a mad, crazy person on social media and is just wackadoo. But yeah, he's still getting painted with this brush of like, you're the reason she's like this. Or, you know what I mean? It's like, dude, this is essentially her high school boyfriend, you know, like he's not responsible for like her entire life. Okay. I'm excited to talk to you about this. All right. Tori Spelling and Bethany Frankel both have divorce podcasts. Now, I want to talk about Tori's first. Mm-hmm. Hers is called Miss Spelling, and I've been fascinated by this. And I'm kind of fascinated by Tori in general because of the way that she's managed to stay in the spotlight for so long. And I agree. That,
yeah.
Yeah. Because I think back to 90210 and, like, she was, like, people thought of her as, she wasn't ugly, by the way, at all, but she was kind of considered, like, the ugly one, the one that only got on because of her dad. And, like, she got a lot of unfair hate, but obviously she got on the show because of her dad. And she's kind of had, like, a bigger career than most of them. I mean, certainly in terms of celebrity pop culture, she's, like, the
Completely.
Biggest star.
Yeah. Complete. 100%.
Yeah. And...
Did you listen to the 90210 podcast she did, the 90210 recap podcast she did with Jenny Garth?
No, but was that any good? Because she's fucking annoying in this new one.
That was good. I listened. They did, maybe they ran through the whole series. I was listening to it when they were doing the high school years, like all the Brandon and Dylan stuff, like the initial seasons. It was good. They gave a lot of behind the scenes info. It was good.
Okay. Well, now... She's got this divorce podcast, but I want to talk about the lead up to this. So what happened first? Obviously, she was with Dean McDermott. That was a big scandal. They were both married at the time. They had an affair on the set of some TV movie that they were filming in Canada. They ran off together. Then they milked that relationship for over a decade with a series of reality shows, Tori and Dean in Love, where they were running a bed and breakfast together, and then they did another show called True Tory, which was about him cheating on her and then reacting to it and trying to save their marriage in real time. She did a bunch of books. I mean,
remember Tory and Dean in Love, where they did created the bed and breakfast?
Yes, I just said that. Did you miss?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was responding to a text. Leave this in.
I was like, girl, thanks for that. I just like recapped that whole show.
What if I just like stroked out? No, I honestly just, I didn't pay attention for 2 seconds. And those were the 2 seconds I got caught.
Well, girl.
You can leave it in.
I'm sorry I'm boring you. My God.
No.
No, it's fine. So she kept that going. And then they finally broke up recently. And then she had this whole thing, which I knew was a publicity stunt. I don't know if you saw it when she was living in an RV. Did you see that?
I think I missed that.
Okay. Well, she was literally living in like a camper van with the kids, but it was clearly staged because the paparazzi were, you know, she's off at some campsite and the paparazzi are taking photos. So she's living in an RV, and then there were pictures of her coming out of like $100 a night motel with the kids. And the narrative there was, you know, Tori's broke after her divorce from Dean, and she's mm-hmm. very good at playing the media, and people were like buying into it. And then
how many kids do they have?
Like 5 or something. They have a lot. Yeah. Well, she says on the podcast that she just kept having kids, like kind of like Bronwyn did on OC. I think it's like, oh, the marriage isn't working. Let me just have another kid. And then she really got my attention because this is right before she announced the divorce. I saw these pictures of her at her storage unit fighting with Dean and like crying in the front of her car and flailing her arms around. And they were shot like from quite far away. So they were really trying to make them look real. But I'm in this business. I know what's fake and what's not. They absolutely were staged because no one captures you at a storage unit flailing your arms around having a fight with your, you know, estranged ex. And I was thinking to myself, what is her game plan with like, is it just to keep her name in the media? Like, what is she doing? Then 2 days later, she announces the divorce. And I was like, oh, okay. So she was creating a narrative around this divorce. Then 2 days mm-hmm. after the divorce, I'm going to tell the story of my divorce on my podcast. I'm like, oh my God, she has been in the media producing this whole storyline of her thing. So then she can put it on a podcast. And basically, she's probably tried to get a reality show of like, you know, Tori's divorce or Tori post Dean, whatever, hasn't been able to get it. So she being the creative, you know, publicity whore genius that she is like, I'm going to put it
into a story.
Yeah, that's perfect. She would do that because all of her books are called like storytelling.
I know. And it always amazes me how she's never able to run out of plays on the name Sad Story.
Spelling it like it is. Yeah, Sad Story is perfect. I cannot believe she didn't do another free idea. She should pay you. So now she has this misspelling podcast, and it's her spilling the details of her divorce. And I believe that a lot of what she's saying is true. I do believe it's very raw, but at the same time, it's also completely performative, and she's like dropping things in there as if she's on a reality show and they have to stage scenes. So like on the first episode of the podcast, she gets a call from Dean, and it's completely staged. And she's like, yeah, you know, I've just filed. And, you know, she's pretending it's the moment she breaks the news to him. And every single episode so far has these like fake moments. And she's so annoying, but I just am obsessed with it.
And then cut to our girl, Bethany. She sees what's happening. She goes, you know what? Time to cash in.
It is so obvious that Bethany has copied Tori's spelling with this, because Tori's spelling is getting many headlines.
I will say this. Do you know my story of calling into... So another Radio Andy history lesson is Bethany had a show called Be Real with Bethany on Radio Andy that she was fired from. But when she had that show, I called in and asked her, would you ever write a book about your divorce? And she said, yes, I would like to write a book, you know, like on how to not get fucked in your divorce. So I like that she's finally given me what I want.
She, well, you know, I noticed that when Tori dropped her podcast, when she announced it, Bethany was one of the people that commented on the post.
Uh-huh.
And I think Tori has been on Bethany's podcast, yes, her Rewives.
Yes.
So she's very familiar with Tori. She saw the clout that Tori was. I mean, Tori is making headlines off of every single episode. It's like a wave of tabloid articles in, you know, Daily Mail, New York Post, E, like all of the places. And Bethany was like, I've fucking got to get in on this. So now we have Just Be Divorced. She's used her old Rewives feed for this. So Rewives, yes, has now become Just Be Divorced. And she's revealing all the details of her split with Jason. I don't know if she's spilling as much as Tori, because Tori so far has revealed that she's a hoarder. She can't poop or pee alone. So she said that she used to shit in front of Dean, and then she started having the kids in the bathroom with her because she's codependent and she can't be by herself.
Well, the difference between Tori and Bethany is Bethany will never say anything negative about herself.
Yeah, that's a good point. Everything is always someone else's fault, whereas Tori isn't afraid to kind of publicly debase and humiliate herself for
that's
attention.
That's her whole brand.
Yeah, but because Tori knows, though, that's all she's got. You know, like if Tori wasn't embarrassing herself, then no one would care. So she's happy to stage photos of herself in a camper van. And it's so funny, on the first episode of Misspelling, she addresses the RV thing and she's like, I couldn't believe it. Like, people thought we were living in a camper van. Like, we were just on vacation, guys. And it's like, girl, if you were just on vacation, you would have cleared it up at the time. You literally had, like, paparazzi getting you in a fucking camper van. And then this third episode of her podcast, which I couldn't believe, she goes and records it and films it from inside her storage unit where she has Dean's stuff. But the storage unit was like taken over by the company because she couldn't pay for it because she's broke. And then they hire a locksmith. I mean, this is all on the podcast. They hire a locksmith to come and break the lock because Tori got one of her friends to pay the bill because she couldn't pay for it herself. So one of her friends comes and pays the bill for the storage unit. Then the locksmith does a runner because he gets intimidated when he shows up to do it and he sees Tori there with like her podcast equipment and like a camera crew and stuff. So he gets stage fright and leaves. And then the owner of the locksmith company has to come and open the unit. And Tori's like sitting on the fucking floor of the storage unit podcasting about, like, you know, oh, here's Dean's old shirts. It's like, this is the most fucking TMI shit, but it's so like Bethany coded, because I could totally imagine Bethany doing that too.
I could as well. The audio quality on Tori's pod, I mean, it's obviously terrible because she's really trying to create like a show.
Yes.
So like it's all tinny and terrible.
We hear people in the background.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of bad audio, I don't know if you'll keep this or not. I know you were talking about Spotify. Shows recorded at Spotify sound horrendous in studio.
Well, mine did. It's weird. So, yes, my audio was bad in addition to my visual and them filming me from the floor looking up to make me look like I was 1,000 pounds heavier. Do I look obese right now, by the way, compared to Spidey?
No, my only complaint, as soon as we got on here, the first thing I said to you was get rid of the hat.
Yes.
And you said you're cold.
Yes. It's actually, I have to admit, and people are going to drag me because I've been praising LA, but it's really bad weather this week and it's horrible. It's rainy.
Well, guess
what?
Gray. It's 72. It's going to be a high of 72 here today and sunny.
Well, you know, you've got to have one good day a year, I guess, over there. So.
It's true. This may be the one good day this year.
Enjoy it, honey.
And I'm inside podcasting with you.
Yeah. I forgot that it was like three. I was trying to like book this and I was getting like the time is wrong. I'm like, I can't believe it's like 3 hours different in the same country.
Jacques doesn't understand Fahrenheit and Celsius. He doesn't understand time zones, even though we just spent years dealing with the Australian time zone.
Because now I've got to adjust to a new one. And it's just a lot.
But it's so easy. It's only 3 hours. It's not that.
I know, but my brain gets programmed then into the Australia versus America one. So this has just added a whole new dimension.
But it's very important for you to get on to get on the Fahrenheit train. Celsius is no longer.
I'm trying to learn that. And it's really hard because now, so I'm back in the gym. I'm working out once or twice a day now. So I'm really hitting it. And it's hard to log it all because I've got to do it in pounds because I'm used to kilos. So yes, literally every time I fucking change a weight, I've got to like open my phone up and like do a fucking conversion. Do you have anything else to say about Bethany's Just Be Divorced? I mean, I assume you listened to the first
episode. Well, yeah, I listened to it.
I liked it.
I liked it too. Yeah, I liked, I mean, I thought it was hilarious how the title of this episode is Just Be Demented. That crack up.
Well, I mean, don't know if I'm keeping that yet, but that's the name of this. Maybe
this
I will
keep
it.
This is the working title.
Yeah, it's the working title.
I found it interesting how, for me, the headline out of that was how Jason was pressuring her to have a baby. It was a few things. Number one, she admits that she wasn't attracted, that her and Jason had sort of a Lindsay and Carl lack of sexual compatibility, or she wasn't attracted to him. And he was pressuring her to have a baby because of her age, which like no man, what man actually like says that to a woman?
Well, I
and
think
also it's also not
though.
Like she's 45. Like she was like thin or mid 30s.
No, but 35, it's still like, because you've got to, like, the clock's ticking. I mean, fertility goes down. I actually think that's pretty
reasonable.
I know,
but what boyfriend is actually saying that? That would come from the woman. No girl doesn't know that information. A new boyfriend is, like, saying that's weird.
No, I think if you're dating someone and children is a big priority for you, and then you're dating someone that's already in their mid-30s, and obviously there's a courting period and everything, so it's going to take more time. You want to be like, hey, just so you know, like, so we're on the same page, it's very important for me to have children, and you're not 20, honey. So I think it's fine. And I don't even know if I believe her version of everything because she does lie so much. So it's, you know, this is the Bethany version. So you kind of,
yeah, she's not a reliable, she's not a reliable narrator. Oh, by the way, you know how in the beginning she was said that she was dating Jason and somebody very famous?
Yeah, some A-lister that like was
It's A-Rod.
Is it really?
Yeah.
How do you know that just from you being
I've always
a Bethany
known
historian?
That I've always known, because I'm a Bethany historian, I've always known that she dated A-Rod for a brief, very brief period of time.
And was he super famous at that point? Because I only really knew him from...
Yeah.
We don't have baseball in Australia, so I only knew him with the J-Lo thing and Madison from Southern Charm.
No, he was like on the Yankee. Like he was I think he was still a Yankee when they dated.
That's so weird that he would be into her. He must be a real star fucker too.
Yes.
And just, you know, because she did have, I guess she had a lot of clout then because she was like quite a big star, like straight out the gate from, from Roni. What else does she say in that podcast? I don't know, man. She's gone from Hillary Clinton to this. Isn't that, no, I'm sorry. Can we just acknowledge that when she started podcasting, I'm interviewing Hillary Clinton and I want to have Mark Cuban and Donald Trump and I'll talk to anyone. And now it's literally like, I'm going to go over my divorce from 10 years ago, bit by bit.
Did you see the video? She did a video. It was like an Instagram story where she had all of her notes about, she pulls out a binder that it's labeled abuse. And then she opens the binder. Did you see this?
No.
Okay. It's you know, there's a label on it that's like typed out that says abuse. She opens the binder and then it's like a few of Brynn's child notebooks with her handwriting. There's no way that this was like these were court documents. I'm pretty sure it was her just like fleshing out ideas for the podcast and trying to remember everything because it all looks like it was written. She writes it in pen and then highlights. It's so Bethany. Writes it in pen on like pink and yellow paper and then highlights every fucking word. The full. Why would you highlight everything? That negates the highlight.
Well, you know.
And then she flips through the whole thing. So I was trying to like stop it. You know, you can like, if you put your finger, you can like slow down the thing. So I was trying to read. It was interesting. That was my Friday night.
I kind of think that I feel like she shouldn't have done a podcast. I mean, I know you said she had a serious thing before, or I feel like her podcast should be more actually based off of the Jeff Lewis style, because now I'm kind of understanding more of this Jeff Lewis world and how his entire podcast is just about, you know, creating content for his radio show and drama and TMI and everything. And I kind of feel like that's what she should be doing, and like building out like a proper world instead of just doing these like random erratic podcasts. It'd be
who's
unfluenced.
In the world? Who's in the world?
Yeah, I guess she has no one, does
no,
she?
No, Brynn is the world. That's why everything, you know how, like, what do you think about her now bringing Brynn into like the content machine?
I know, because I feel like she used to sort of keep Brynn private, and now all of a sudden Brynn's front
because,
and center.
That was because when they shared custody, that was Jason's, that was one of his points.
Oh, okay. So what now, does she have full custody or something? Yeah. So she can do whatever she wants?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I think
okay.
She has, even... I think she has primary custody, yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe because the divorce is finished or whatever, so she can do whatever she wants. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I liked seeing Bethany in Australia. I thought that was fun, her in Australia with Brynn. And it did make me miss Australia a bit more because, you know, obviously she's highlighting all like the best parts of it and stuff. But it was also kind of insane how most of her tour was just going into like convenience stores and screaming about the candy. And it's like, you're not eating this candy. I don't know why she has to constantly pretend that she's eating candy and desserts all the time when she's
like, because she like, has an enormous eating disorder.
Yeah. Or do you think maybe she is eating it and then that's all she's eating? Is candy and then doing Barry's?
Who knows? Barry's? Girl. She's not doing Barry's.
Well, she's doing something. She looks pretty ripped. Okay.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if she's just on Adderall and like, I don't know. Something.
I mean, she's on nature's Adderall. I don't think she needs anything. Do you have any thoughts on, like, before we wrap up, Vanderpump Rules, The Valley, etc.? I mean, I'm still loving both.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just texting Zach this yesterday because I'm watching Summer House, Vanderpump, and The Valley. I'm loving Summer House. That's the best show on Bravo right now. Then Vanderpump is like still pretty good. The Valley is like exhausting to watch.
Oh, I disagree. I think The Valley is like incredible, but you don't like heteronormative, like you don't like kids, you don't like couples. Like you watch the premiere and you're like, why isn't the gay guy and the black lesbian in it more? And it's like,
that's not what I said, that would
be a completely different show.
I said like there are too many kids.
But it's a show about couples
I don't want to see kids.
Well, you know, typical rainbow mafia tearing down the hetero society.
What do you love about? I mean, I don't know. It's just a bit over. I mean, I was gonna say it's a bit overworked, but I love all the Kristen stuff. Here's the thing. I only want to see Jax and Kristen. There's not enough Jax.
No, I love everyone. I love everything. No, I think it's fucking incredible. I think that's what the Hills reboot should have been. Leaning into sort of that style more. It's like a younger Housewives. I think there was a gap in kind of the market for it. No, I think it's so great. What's so good about Summer House? Because from what I mean, I know everyone loves the guy with the mustache. People are obsessed with him, the cute guy. And then I don't know, the Carl, is it still watchable beyond Carl and Lindsay? Cause I'm not watching it.
Well, the Carl and Lindsay stuff is the most interesting because they're talking about the fact that they don't have sex. Like they're being way more honest than you would think they are. Like you really see the relationship for what it was. And I thought we were just going to see the end, the breakup. And you're literally seeing like these, you're seeing
the demise.
You're seeing it totally raw. And then separately, they really got the casting right. With new people, they've always had trouble casting new people. Oh, like people
that's their
be
biggest
like
issue.
They would always have like one and dones, like one season wonders, and they finally got it right with West. He's just like really fun to watch. He's very likable. He's dating Sierra, who normally I don't give a shit about Sierra, but like it's fun to. He's just a breath of fresh air, and the other new guy is good. The other new guy is good too.
And what about that Gabby girl? Like, I didn't think she was good last year, and I
can't
believe
they
kept her.
She's really like a friend of. Like, there are full episodes where she's not on. Her and Danielle basically are not on the show.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I should watch because
they're in like one scene, maybe per episode. They're like not there at all.
I'm really glad that they seem to have got the memo to stop pushing Danielle, because it's like they were trying to push Danielle as like a main character for a few seasons. It's like, stop. Like, she has no charisma. Like, she just has nothing.
What has been your take on Kyle and Amanda, their marriage?
Well, again, I'm not watching this season, but I don't know. I always assume it's probably not that bad, and it's different when you're filming a reality show and things are going under the microscope, but I always feel like Kyle is probably a lot more professional than he comes off, because, you know, I think he drinks and turns up on camera, but if you're like running a business and created a brand and all of this stuff, like, you can't be a complete dunce, you know?
Yeah, they get into a lot of that. I think these two people just hate each other. I don't think they're gonna last. Like, if you added kids into the mix between the two of them, it would like implode. I don't think they're going to last. Like, they may break up like 10 years from now, but I don't think they're going to last in the grand scheme. But a lot of it is like their horrible relationship.
Oh, okay. So it's just like two relationships like imploding, essentially.
Which I love to see.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like that on The Valley with Michelle and Jesse and doing their counseling and everything. So I feel like they're being very raw. I actually think that a lot of people now on reality, I think people are actually being more raw and putting their shit out there, because, you know, it's hard to get on a reality show. It's very competitive. You kind of have to like fucking put it all out there, or you're not going to get asked back. And I think they know that. And I think now people with social media, people have gotten more comfortable with sharing things and oversharing online and stuff. So it's getting easier for people. So it's actually not that much of a shock that they're on here and they're just going, you know, we don't have sex, like, and just putting it on Front Street. I am happy that Carl and Lindsay's relationship is kind of falling to pieces, just because it was always fucking ridiculous. And Lindsay and Carl got this big fandom around them as if like they're perfect, and anyone that criticized them is just jealous. And they really villainize Paige, who I think is totally normal and cool and fun. And
no, you usually see a lot more of like Lindsay is being so vulnerable with Paige and being honest about the relationship. Like, Paige is asking the hard questions, like, how many times a month are you having sex? And Lindsay's like, two. And then Paige is like, okay, so none. Like, if you're women lie in the other direction.
I thought it was very obvious, though, that Carl and Lindsay's relationship did feel like a big PR stunt and branding, like the way that they were kind of flogging it out there. I mean, maybe Lindsay was the driving force behind that, because she used to work in publicity, so she has that brain. I mean, me working at Daily Mail, like, I think like that constantly. And I have a lot of friends that have, you know, been on television and stuff, like, not in like big levels, but just people from reality shows and stuff. I'm literally always like messaging people like, this is what you should do. I mean, that's why Spencer and I get along, because we both have, our brains are both wired that way. And I think Lindsay is the same as that, where she's always thinking like, what's the next stunt? So I think she just commercialized the whole romance into storyline and television, and Carl came along for the ride. I was just surprised that the audience like bought into it. But again, it's the Bravo audience who are like the fucking lowest common denominator. So they seem to believe anything they believe is wrong, is generally the rule. What is your take on Lala on Vanderpump? Because I'm kind of fascinated by how far she's gone out on a limb to like go against Ariana. And it's like, it's more and more every day. And she's on like a whole podcast tour and media tour, like every day there's a new interview of her discussing Ariana.
I loved the thing about the Virgo in her. Was that it? The Virgo in her wants to always keep the follower count, because she's 2. Whatever. She always wants to keep it the same number.
But I'm a Virgo and I do that. So I was kind of like, maybe she's telling the truth, sort of.
No, I believe her. I think it's just hilarious that, of course, the two people she unfollowed, you know. Well, as far as the show, I can't believe how much sense Lala's making. Like, I've really gone on a journey with Lala. Like, for so many years, I like really couldn't stand her. And then this is the first time in so many years that like I feel like she's like making sense and she's calm and I like it. The podcast tour, I haven't listened to. I listened to her on Jeff Lewis.
Oh, okay. Did you listen to her episode where Heather came on her show?
Yes, I did.
That was good, because I thought Heather was able to come back for that. Because I'm a little bit, like, I'm really not team anybody. Like, I that's why I actually really like this season. I keep saying it over and over. It's like, I see where everybody's coming from and I kind of agree with everybody. And I enjoy that because I think especially with the Bravo audience, they're so quick to be like, team this and like really vilify the other person.
Regarding the Ariana, I think Ariana is going to leave the show. Because they're not going to be able to continue with the two of them. And I think she doesn't need it. And I think it would actually like free her up to do other things.
I think she does need it. I mean, the opportunities are pouring in right now. I'll be curious to see what her rate is with Instagram ads and stuff. Like, obviously, it would be very high off the back of it, but that only lasts for a certain amount of time. Like, that is going to die down. But I mean, she's still getting opportunities, but nothing that she's doing is long term. Like, you know, Candy Burris is the best example. Like, she fucking knew I'm staying on this show because everything else I get is because I'm still on television half the year. The Kardashians are the same. The Kardashians are like doing Vogue and like the biggest campaigns ever, but they know like our relevancy comes from having a television show behind us. So I think it can be
I know, but the difference.
Oh, she's doing Love Island, actually. She's doing Love Island. That's a job. Yes.
The difference is that she doesn't want to be around Tom Sandoval. And this means so long as she does the show, she's going to have to be around this guy. And just as a human being, she's like, she either has to like lean all the way into it. Like the audience is going to get fed up with her, you know, dismissing him. And even though that's the most entertaining stuff is when she freaks out. That is by far the most entertaining stuff. When they fight, it's like chemistry. Same thing with Tom and Schwartz and
Katie. It's so good.
Nothing is more interesting than the two of them. Now
it's hilarious just watching them banter back and forth.
They
it's
have such
so
great
funny.
Chemistry. It's so great. Like as friends, they have great chemistry. And Tom and Sandoval and Ariana have chemistry when they're fighting. And so
I think the season's so great, except, you know, James isn't in it that much, which is funny. Yeah, which I kind of like because he was getting a little too big for his boots. I don't know if maybe they edited him down.
Do you think he's ever going to come out?
Well, I don't think he's gay. You do. You think everyone's gay.
I definitely think I can make a list. Yeah, I definitely think Allie is a beard.
Yeah, well, she is.
And so,
like,
and so is Raquel.
Yes,
and so is Kristen.
No, he was definitely fucking Kristen, though. Like, they were having sex.
He's like he's bisexual. Well, then he's bisexual, but he's gonna, they're all just beards. Raquel and Allie are the typical beard, you know, the typical thing that a gay guy would be like, oh, she's pretty, just because like they're pretty and boring.
Well, they want to be on TV as well, so yes. they very much want to have a career, so that's a driving force for them to be with James for sure. Yeah, I don't know, but obviously with this reunion coming up, they are teasing something really big. There's some big secret, so you could be right about Ariana. And I do think that the best thing for the show at this point would be for Ariana to leave, because it would just shift all of the group dynamics massively. You wouldn't have, in the same way that taking Lisa Vanderpump out of Beverly Hills was so good for it, because it just loosened people up to not have to be on guard or whatever. With Ariana, we have, you know, Sheena obviously feels a certain type of way about it, but she doesn't want to go against the audience because she knows how much fandom Ariana has. So I just think that would be interesting. We could get Tom Sandoval back in the group. Katie then, because Katie's so hardcore aligned herself with Ariana. Then how does Katie fit back in? I love Katie, by the way.
Oh, me too.
I think she's so underrated. I think she's fucking hot. I think her makeover is great. She's definitely worked with a stylist. Like, I think in the last year or something, she literally hired like an image person, said, I need to redo my look. What do you think? And they've gone, well, what if you like cut your hair off and you go a bit more tomboy or something? I think she looks fucking cool.
Yeah.
I was talking to my friend, Dan, and we were talking about Katie a lot, and he's become a big Katie fan too. And we were like, she's kind of like one of the prettiest on the show and always has been. And I think she's never got the credit for, because I was looking at old clips too, and she has the most gorgeous face. And I think because she doesn't have a ton of charisma compared to a lot of the other ones, and her style was never that good, you never really noticed it, but she's kind of like the prettiest one on the show. So,
and I think also because her hair was always doing, her hair was always like not the right color or like way too long or with these like shitty extensions. Like, this haircut is the best haircut in the history. And it's kind of like when Ariana first cut her hair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
You gotta cut the hair, like show the face.
Yeah, well, if you've got face, if you don't have a good face, then hide it with hair. But if you do have a good face, girl, give that snatched look. So yeah, she looks incredible.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. I'm just so fascinated by this Lala thing of like how much, there's definitely a percentage of it that's like trying to make a show for sure. And she knows that she has to, like, she knows what's driving the show, and she knows that someone on the cast has to be the voice of pushing back against Ariana, and it can't just be Tom Sandoval. So she definitely knows it from a production point of view, but also so many of the things she's raising are valid. She's getting so much hate by the audience, by the way. Like, it's a lot. I didn't kind of realize, because I think, you know, you're smart, and like people that I know, like my friends that are like watching it and we talk about it, we kind of agree with Lala and get where she's coming from. But again, like the dumb Bravo viewers, they're like fucking outraged. Like, the subreddits are on fire.
Also, by the way, up until these last two episodes, Ariana like wasn't even on, she was in one scene per episode. She was like barely on the show. So I don't know.
Yeah. And Lala
said that. I like her, but whatever.
No, I like her too. I like everyone. And Lala said at the reunion too that everyone was being really fake. So I think I don't know, something crazy happens at the reunion. I hope it's that Ariana quits, because I just think that would be really cool. And
or yeah, it's going to be a revelation that Ariana knew that he was dating Raquel.
Yeah, there could be something like that. Lala might drop a bomb. I could see her doing that, going, you want the, here's the receipts, you knew, or whatever.
It's That'll something so like crazy. She knew, and she was just going along with it because she had to stay on the show and keep the business. And she, the offending thing was that he embarrassed her publicly.
There'll be something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm very excited for the future of Vanderpump Rules. Very much into it. Okay, girl. Oh, wait. The one last point. This is very quick, and you probably didn't watch it. I just want to shit on it one last time. Did you see the Real Housewives of Dubai season 2 trailer?
I saw like a second of it.
It's so bad. It's so fucking boring.
I can't believe they're airing it.
I think that it's going to tank so fucking hard.
And I'm happy that they're not doing BravoCon this year. It's too much.
Oh,
like, stop
know.
It already.
Well, we've discussed this about how BravoCon kind of ruined the Housewives. It's broken Completely. The fourth wall too much. And yeah, they need to like take breaks. So it should happen every maybe like three years. Like, it's, I don't know. Now they're just using BravoCon to like drive storylines and stuff. But I can't wait for Dubai Housewives to come out and fucking flop. That's my prediction. The trailer was terrible. I feel like it's just so outdated. It looks like a Netflix show that's like trying to be the Housewives. The first season was horrible. I will never forget the fandom coming out and screaming on the first episode, it's the greatest premiere we've ever seen. They did that with Roni as well. This is the new generation. And then like the season keeps going and it's so bad, you have to admit like, oh, this is actually like really shit. So I'm looking forward to the cancellation of Dubai. Oh, and I'm kind of excited for Jersey, to be honest.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see how they film it with like Melissa and Teresa not interacting.
My friend produced Jersey.
Oh, did he give you any tea on the new season?
I don't ask him. I try not to like pry him, but I know it's because like it's his job. Like, he's like there every day, like dealing with it.
But did he give a sense
he
of
says
like,
it's,
oh,
he
it's
says
good.
It's really, he says it's really good.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be good. And I can't wait to see. I'm very excited to see Jackie so thirstily then suddenly become friends with Teresa, and then how they react to that and like calling her out. And I hope they fully break the fourth wall and they're like, you're doing this for like the show. All right, thank you so much for coming back on the pod. This was great. I thought we wouldn't, I wasn't sure if we had enough topics, and here we are over an hour clocking in. So
we went a little long on JT, sorry for that. Bored people, but
no, I think it was fine. People, I'm getting a lot of good feedback about the music coverage. Good. People are good. Into it. Anything you want to plug before you go?
Yeah, my show is Hot Takes and Deep Dives. This week, I have somebody who is an executive writer, director, and executive producer on all the seasons of The L Word, and she really says a lot. But she walked away from her contract during one of the seasons, and it's very, very interesting. So that's a lot of fun. You can follow me, JessXNYC. That's it.